Uncle Laser here. America's built on fast cars, fast food, and even faster women. Photo Casino's built in America. You know what they're fast at? Fast cash prize redemption. You see, the only moto is U.S. owned and operated. Moto. It's American made. That's who we are, and that's who we care about. Play for free at Moto.us.
Moto Casinos, the social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Realpolitik. I am your host, Firas Mahdad, and today we're going to be talking a little bit more about the Iran war, how things seem to be going from an American perspective. And then we're going to pivot a little bit and talk about Lebanon and the planned Israeli invasion for that country. Now, if we look at what's been happening in the war itself, the Americans have been bombing quite heavily the west and southwest of Iran, with the idea being that they want to destroy a significant amount of Iran's missile launch capabilities. And we keep hearing that the number of launchers has been massively reduced, and the actual firing rate of the Iranians has reduced quite significantly. But there are two points that I want to make. The first point is that the U.S. is focusing on attacking this area in the west of the country, and then moving inwards so that they can target Tehran more effectively and target the center of the country more effectively. And that, as a strategy, makes sense. But there's one thing to consider, which is that if you're the Iranians, once some of your bases are damaged, these are, in a lot of cases, underground bases, and the tunnel entrances are being damaged, and it takes a bit of time to reopen them. So what you might consider doing is delaying reopening these tunnels and delaying resuming the use of these bases because they've been exposed, and focusing a little bit on survivability of your ability to launch weapons, so that as the Iranians continue to degrade the radars and the air defenses of the United States and Israel, they would then be in a position to deliver a large strike near the end of the war. And this isn't unusual. This is exactly how Hezbollah fought in 2006. In 2006, Hezbollah made a point of making sure that the last day of the war was right before the ceasefire took effect, was the day in which they launched the largest number of missiles and delivered, therefore, the biggest blow. And they were able to use that to spin a victory narrative. So if you're Iran and you're fighting kind of as an insurgency, which is what the Iranians are doing, then that makes sense. And the U.S. strategy of detecting the entrances of these tunnels, trying to damage them and destroy them, you respond to that by focusing on survival. And you fire from inland more and more, and you force the Americans to go more in depth, and therefore that means that they can conduct fewer airstrikes. And then when the war is waning, you try to deliver bigger blows in order to say that you're winning. That's kind of how the Iranians fight. The second point to make is that the Iranians need to fire less now. They've demonstrated that they can cause massive damage to American military bases. We are seeing images of that damage all over social media. You see satellite imagery of U.S. bases in Kuwait and in Qatar and in Bahrain and in the UAE, and they've all been quite significantly degraded. That means now the idea is to maintain the pressure. And the process of maintaining pressure requires less use of ordnance, especially when you know that you don't have air superiority. In fact, Iranian airspace is fully exposed, or largely exposed. And so you use that in order to just keep up the pressure on the Gulf states and on energy markets, so that you can then say that you're achieving your political objective, which is to show the United States that every time they attack Iran, the entire global energy market gets disrupted, the Middle East in its entirety gets attacked, and therefore you use that to create deterrence. So this is sort of what's happening with the missile fire. Plus, the Iranians are still causing damage to central Tel Aviv. They are still able to fire missiles, and these missiles are not always being intercepted. We don't really trust the interception figures to begin with. As we saw with the Ukraine war, both the Russians and the Ukrainians were lying about their interception rates. So I would assume that there is some falsification of the data, some exaggeration of the success rate of interceptors, meaning that we are still very much in a fog of war. But what we do know for sure from the imagery that we're seeing is that American bases have taken significant damage. This is true. A lot of energy assets throughout the Gulf have taken significant damage. This is not contestable. Iran itself has taken massive damage, enormous damage. The problem has been, from the American perspective, is that this has not had the desired effect. One of the objectives of the war was to create the conditions through which Iranian protesters would simply rise up and overthrow the regime, and then you'd have a government that is friendly to Israel and the United States. The exact opposite has happened. There has been a rallying around the flag. Every time a building is destroyed, after they retrieve the bodies and the injured and so on, they plant an Iranian flag on top of it. And anybody who is seen as protesting the regime is seen now as supporting a foreign assault on Iran. And Iran is not only a Shia country that values martyrdom quite highly, it is also an incredibly nationalistic country that really doesn't like the idea of foreign interference, be it from the Russians or from the Americans or from anybody else for that matter. Indeed, one of the big failings of Iranian air defense comes from this nationalism, because the Iranians refuse to wholly depend on either China or Russia for their air defense, meaning that they had to develop their own domestic alternatives, which arguably weren't as good. And the reason for that was because they didn't want to become too dependent. Now, how does this in the end play out? Well, if the regime survives, the first thing that they're going to have to do after a ceasefire is pretty much give the Chinese whatever assets they want within Iran, and use that to acquire defense systems from the Chinese and from the Russians. If you remember, in, I believe, 2017 or 2018, the Russians managed to get, briefly, basing rights within Iran. And they used these basing rights so that they could fly from Iranian airspace all the way to Yemen. And they had some of their long-range strategic bombers, the Bear, fly from bases in Iran all the way to the coasts of Yemen. And the Russians were sort of sending a message by doing that, that, look, we can dominate the airspace over the Gulf if we partner with Iran. This itself triggered a backlash from the Iranian parliament, because the Iranian constitution doesn't allow for any foreign bases on their territory. But now the Iranians are going to have no choice. They're going to have to cede a huge amount of ground to the Chinese and to the Russians at the expense of their sovereignty to immunize themselves against the next attack. And remember, with Khamenei dead, there is no religious reason for them not to develop a nuclear weapon anymore. It was the fatwa of the former supreme leader, Ali Khamenei, that prevented them from developing a nuclear weapon. Now, with a new supreme leader, they could decide that the threat is sufficiently existential for them to build one. So we'll see how that goes. But let's see how the Americans feel about the war and what seems to be going on. Well, for one thing, now refueling flights that are being used to target Iran are avoiding Iraqi airspace, because a couple of days ago, there was an accident, supposedly, between two American tankers, and one of them was lost, and six crew members were killed, unfortunately. And I say unfortunately about all people who are killed during war, both civilian and combatant. War is a terrible thing. You shouldn't rejoice in the death of people in war, even. But the fact that they're having to use this longer route and avoid Iraqi airspace might suggest something slightly different, which is that this tanker was shot down by air defense. We're also seeing that the American tanker, the American aircraft carriers are sort of moving away from Iran. So the Gerald Ford, which is supposed to go through the Red Sea and then pass through Bab al-Mandab and exit and join the area of operations here, actually has opted to stay in the vicinity of Jeddah, here next to Saudi Arabia, so that they would have these mountains in the west of Saudi Arabia kind of protect them from the possibility of attack by the Iranians. And the other aircraft carrier is supposed to be operating somewhat in this area, south of Oman, meaning that they are making sure that there aren't just open seas between them and the Iranian coast. And this suggests that there is some anti-ship capability that the Americans are concerned about. It also suggests that the Americans really don't want to cross through Bab al-Mandab. They don't want to expose themselves to major attacks from the Houthi because of what might be getting prepared there. So these are two indications that the war isn't really going particularly great from an American perspective, but the indications from the political arena are even stronger. Here we have Bob McNally, who's a former White House energy advisor, saying that there isn't really a solution to what is happening in the Strait of Hormuz, that they don't have any options that would allow the United States to reopen the Strait of Hormuz and resume the flow of energy. And what we've seen the Iranians do is attack the energy facilities in the UAE, in Fujairah, here, which are intended, essentially, to bypass Hormuz. So what the Iranians do, they blew up all the fuel tanks and all the oil storage tanks in the port of Fujairah, created a massive fire, meaning that the oil that gets pumped from Abu Dhabi around about this area where Habshan is located, that oil gets sent by pipeline all the way bypassing the Strait of Hormuz up there and goes through here, and that export terminal or that export capability has been disabled. And the Americans are now saying, look, we don't actually have a policy solution for this. We don't have a way to open it. Then you kind of see this unhinged press conference from Secretary of War Pete Hegseth. And I want us to listen to this together for a couple of minutes to get an impression of how things are really going.
Because you, and I mean specifically you, the press, specifically you, the press corps, because you cheer against Trump so hard, it's like in your DNA and in your blood to cheer against Trump, because you want him not to be successful so bad, you have to cheer against the efficacy of these strikes. You have to hope maybe they weren't effective. Maybe the way the Trump administration has represented them isn't true. So let's take half-truths, spun information, leaked information, and then spin it. Spin it in every way we can to try to cause doubt and manipulate the mind, the public mind, over whether or not our brave pilots were successful. How many stories have been written about how hard it is to, I don't know, fly a plane for 36 hours? Has MSNBC done that story? Has Fox? Have we done the story how hard that is? Have we done it two or three times so that American people understand? How about how difficult it is to shoot a drone from an F-15 or 16 or F-22 or F-35? Or what it's like to man a Patriot battery? Or how hard it is to refuel midair? Giving the American people an understanding of how complex and sophisticated this mission really was. There are so many aspects of what our brave men and women did that because of the hatred of this press corps are undermined because your people are trying to leak and spin that it wasn't successful. It's irresponsible.
Look, I think that when you see senior officials react in this way, what tells you is that they are under massive pressure. What it tells you is that they are under massive pressure and that their narrative simply isn't convincing anyone. And as a result, they lash out in this rather extreme way. But underneath that, there's also something important. Hegseth is emphasizing the complexity of American operations. Now, there's a problem here. highly technical, highly complex operations, things always go wrong in them at some point, which is natural. It's not an accusation. But the issue has been that the strategy of the so-called resistance axis, which is Iran and its allies, has always been to counter very complex operations with very simple solutions. So, for example, the Americans are saying that they have fully neutralized Iranian command and control. Okay. That's how they define it in military terms. But the reality is that we're seeing Hezbollah and Iran conduct coordinated strikes against Israel, meaning that there is still a chain of command that is operating, meaning that there is still communication that is operating, meaning that they're still passing intelligence to each other on target selection. And speaking to somebody who was informed about this stuff, he was telling me that they could be doing this over something as simple as World of Warcraft, or Signal, or Telegram, or whatever, or any kind of simple communications where there is massive volume and it's difficult to detect the signal from the noise. So they engage in these highly complex operations, but the enemy on the other side just sticks to simple solutions that it knows well, such as maintaining missile fire that is enough to cause massive economic disruption that creates political pressure, and then that political pressure at some point forces the war to an end, and then the Iranians declare victory regardless of how much damage they've taken. So we've seen this playbook in the past, and it seems that they've fallen into this playbook, and they don't have a way out of it. Other reactions that we're seeing from Trump, here he is reacting to a reporter asking him, why is the United States sending the Marines to the Middle East to sort of potentially engage in a ground operation? Listen to that. Sorry, the audio on this is terrible, so I won't actually play it. But his response to this question, which is a simple question: I don't talk to people like you about that. Why would I tell you if I'm sending or I'm not sending? Who would answer a question like that? Well, if you're the commander-in-chief, you've got to be able to spin a narrative, convincing or unconvincing, about why you are sending ground troops and what do you intend to do with them. And why will these men be risking their lives, dying on the shores of Iran? And the fact that he can't do that and that he's in sort of meltdown mode is really a problem. Now, when it comes to this talk of a ground operation, there's been a lot of rumors about the United States sending their forces to capture this island here, Kharg Island, which sits off the coast of Iran. To understand the importance of this, the Iranian oil fields are largely in this area, on the border with Iraq, in an area referred to as Ahvaz or Khuzestan or whatever you want to call it. This used to be a largely Arab area, but it's largely been Persianized. And that's where most of the oil is. The gas comes offshore from an area facing Qatar, but the oil gets pumped by pipeline mostly into this island. There are alternative routes, but this is the most important one. And then the ships load it and it gets exported. And there's talk that the United States will use the Marines to try to seize this island. I don't buy that for a second. I have to say that I don't buy that for a second. If you look at the distances here and how defense would work, the Iranians would sort of surround this area with anti-ship missiles and with drone bases. And these wouldn't be activated now. They would be activated later when there are valuable targets, obviously. And this is right across the coast from Bushehr, where the Iranians have their nuclear energy reactor. The one facility that produces electricity from nuclear energy, built in collaboration with the Russians. Originally, I think it was with the Germans in the days of the Shah, and the Russians delayed it for a long time. But now it's in collaboration with the Russians. And this is obviously a heavily fortified, heavily defended point. And sending 2,500 Marines or 5,000 Marines to try to capture that area doesn't really pass the sniff test. It doesn't really make sense. So they're sending ground forces into the region, because toppling the regime from the air obviously was never going to work. Like I said in the previous episode, in Serbia, it took 78 days for the population of Serbia, which was 6 million people, to surrender. Iran has 92, 93 million people and is 20 times the size. So it's not going to work. But that means that sending ground forces is going to be even less effective. What could be the case is that the United States is planning on trying to seize a bunch of these islands here. So this is actually the island of Hormuz, after which the strait is named. And this is Kashab. And then you have a bunch of islands here, and then you have Abu Musa, Tumb al-Kubra, and Tumb al-Sughra, Greater Tumb and Lesser Tumb. And these islands are obviously turned into military bases by the IRGC because they can help police the Gulf. And you could use these islands to target ships as they gather to be escorted by convoys through the Strait of Hormuz. Once they're in the strait, they can be targeted from three sides and they can be attacked from these islands. And you use that to diversify, shall we say, your firing positions in order to confuse the defense systems and in order to use this particularly narrow region to maximize the impact of your attacks. But you could use the islands themselves quite similarly. And if you're going to send ground forces, well, it makes a lot more sense to try to seize some of these islands. But again, this is quite difficult, because these islands are going to be fortified, because the Iranians know that this might be part of your plan. And sending 2,500 Marines, will it be enough for an operation of this size? I doubt it. But it seems that this is the only way that they have to try to reopen the strait. And you can see from Trump's response, obviously he can't reveal that, he can't say that publicly, but from the way that he's responding, it would have been a lot more reasonable to say, we're going to surprise the Iranians, they're going to have no idea what hit them, we're going to force them to surrender, something like that. Instead, he just goes off on a rant and attacks the media. And you see that the Iranians seem to have mined the strait already, meaning that sending in the Marines is going to have to come in conjunction with other things like demining, and meaning that it is going to be quite difficult for this to be a success. And we know that it's going to be difficult because the Americans are already asking a bunch of European countries to send their own forces to help open Hormuz. And obviously the Europeans have said no because they struggled massively to help with opening Bab el-Mandeb through the Aspiris mission, I believe it was called. They don't have the resources to go and try to open this area. But then also, you have to remember that given the size of the US Navy and its power, if they can't actually force open Hormuz by themselves, having others participate isn't going to change things. It really isn't going to change very much. And you can see that the American position is quite desperate because they're asking China to come and help open the Strait of Hormuz. And Trump says that China gets 90% of its oil through the Strait of Hormuz. In reality, it's something like 50%. But imagine asking China to help you resolve a war that you started by choice. How desperate does that look? And the fact that Trump is making that request, from the Chinese perspective, it just makes him look unhinged and completely out of touch with reality. Apparently, the Japanese have said no, the South Koreans have said no, and understandably, because if a big chunk of the Japanese or the South Korean Navy gets sent into Hormuz and then they take losses, what does that do? That leaves them more exposed to China moving on Taiwan. That's all that it does. And so just making that request is a sign of desperation and is a sign of complete detachment from reality. And you see how many problems the Americans are facing, because you have Besant admitting that the Americans are allowing Iranian ships to transit Hormuz instead of seizing them.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.